changing the direction of the criminal justice system is an extraordinarily difficult and daunting task. We are incredibly fortunate in this state that we have two people in positions of considerable authority and responsibility to help move the direction of the criminal justice system, both of whom are very big champions of the treatment court approach. So it is my honor to present to you Vermont's court administrator, Patricia Gabel, and the chief judge of the trial courts, Brian Grierson. So I guess I get to go first in the coveted 1 o'clock slot. I don't mind the coveted 1 o'clock slot. I got it last year. But I do have to say, and I've worked hard with Bobby along with the other folks putting these programs together, but I'm seeing a theme here that I think is a bit unfair. I've had to follow Vanessa Price and her comments, and there's no doubt she was a powerful speaker. Last year I had to follow Terry Walton. So there's a pattern here that I'm really not too comfortable with, but I'm going to do my best. But thank you. And I guess I would extend a thank you to everyone who's here. Whether you're here because you're a believer and a supporter in treatment courts, or whether you're just interested in knowing more about treatment courts, and as I think Anna Saxman repeated the theme, why don't we have a treatment court in every county? I don't think I can give you a complete answer to that, but between Pat Gabel and I, we're going to try to give you some information about where we are and where we hope to go, and hopefully some changes since last year. But I really want to thank everyone. I had to admire Governor Shumlin for a lot of reasons, but he could just look at this crowd and estimate 150 people, and that's a gift, I guess, if you've been in politics that long, that you can estimate the crowd. And he was pretty accurate, because we've got just under 150, and I think we had to close the registration. So it's really important for all of us here, because if nothing else, the treatment courts are a collaborative process. They wouldn't exist without collaboration of all of the folks involved. And so it's important that we are here. And I know some names have mentioned, but before I tell you where we are and where I would like to go, I just want to acknowledge certainly Governor Shumlin, who started the dialogue a few years ago, in an important dialogue that he continues to be a strong advocate for treatment. And when you ultimately get down to treatment courts, I'm supposed to call them treatment dockets now, so I'll go back and forth, but because they're not really courts, I'm told, they're dockets. But anyway, that's really what it's all about, is treatment, making treatment available at each step along the spectrum of the criminal justice process, whether it's pretrial intervention, rapid intervention, whether it's, as most of these programs are, at the end, post-sentencing, post-plea. It's important to have that dialogue in every step of the way. Chief Justice Reiber is here, a supporter. We thank the chief for being here, and Associate Justice Robinson, I think, was here. She sat at my table briefly, and then I got distracted, and she did. But yes, thank you for coming. Retired Associate Justice Brian Burgess is here, and we thank him for his support. He's gone on to be very involved in the DUI court process, working with Bobby Sand. And so we're thankful that he is still involved in the process, and we look forward to working with him. Obviously, the members of the other judges that are here, some who are involved directly with the treatment courts, like Judge Griffin, Judge McCaffrey is here. Judge DeMauro and others who are interested. I know Judge Morrissey is just starting out in Franklin. Have they got you in the adolescent court yet? Good. And we're going to talk a little more about that. So we have a mix of people that are involved in the courts and some that want to get more involved. And apart from the executive branch and the judicial branch, obviously we have a number of representatives and senators here, Senator Nitka, Senator Benning, Representative Conquest. Yes, I saw you, Patsy, Representative French, and Representative Haas, and Representative Carlson. It's important that these folks, and I don't know if Lisa is here. Did Lisa go home, Keith?
Yes, she did.
So Lisa Menard was here all morning, and she stayed at the back table there and quietly minded her own affairs. But it's important to understand that with the Department of Corrections represented here, because in most of the treatment courts, now they play a role, and they are part of the treatment team. And that's not something to be taken lightly, because it's a progression of these courts over time as to who should populate these treatment teams, and we continually evolve. And Keith Tallon, who's at one of the back tables, will be on a panel later on as a representative of the Department of Corrections and probation officer. And just as a real quick aside, Keith and I are graduates of Spalding High School in 1967, and I can guarantee you that there is not a single person in that class that would have thought that Keith Tallon and I would have shared this podium today on this subject in our representative capacity. So apart from that, there isn't anybody in this room who has not experienced the impact of the opiate epidemic on the dockets. Directly on the juvenile docket, of course, but also in the criminal dockets and family dockets. And no one is more aware than Bobby, perhaps, Justice Burgess about the impact of drinking alcohol and the mixture of alcohol and drugs with the increased accidents, fatalities, the complications of the mixture of drugs and alcohol, what it means for the prosecution. I know there's a number of prosecutors here. So all of us, at whatever perspective we have, are impacted by this. And we believe that the treatment courts, or dockets, as you may wish to call them, can play a significant role in making a difference in the lives of the people that come into court with those issues. And we have been able to demonstrate that. And I'm going to defer to Pat on the statistics and where we stand on that as opposed to myself. But I want to thank Judge Griffin for volunteering me to provide that response. But they are effective. And I was here last year, and I took really two messages away from last year's program that have carried with me and been the source of the discussions between myself, the court administrator's office, and the court, and how we should proceed. And the first message from Terry Walton really was, look, these courts, and as Vanessa said, these courts are effective. They're effective if they are run properly, and if they involve the use of best practices. If they're not run that way, they're not effective, and in a worst case scenario, if they're not run properly, they can be harmful to the people that we bring into the programs. So our focus over the last year, having that thought in mind that was repeated by Vanessa this morning, and the other message or the other import that I took from last year's conference was the sheer energy that generated from that conference, both by attorneys and other judges approaching me and the office saying, can't we have a treatment court? Why can't we have a treatment court? I want to have a treatment court. Whether it was mental health, whether it was veterans court, we've been visited this summer by a representative from the law school, drug courts, family treatment courts. And the answer is, it is not that we don't see the importance of them, but what we really have to do is make sure that the courts that we put into play, that we implement, are run properly. So what we've tried to do over the last year is take stock of where we are, what we have, and build on what we have with the idea of expanding that It's not going to be a quick process, but it's one that I think needs to be deliberative. And I was talking with one judge who's involved in the Family Treatment Court in Caledonia. And that court has been around for a long time. It's not not a lot of folks involved in it. So the question is, it's there. Why isn't it being used more? Those are the kinds of questions that we have to ask of the courts that are in existence now. How can we build on what we have? And that's really the goal of what we want to do. With that in mind, and you've heard and you've seen, for instance, Stephanie Clark come to the podium. Stephanie Clark was instrumental in making the first DUI court in Windsor and White River extremely successful. She is a very tough act to follow. We think we found someone, Nicole Sorrell here. Yes. We think we found someone to fill those shoes. And I sympathize with you, Nicole, because in my position, I've had to follow in the shoes of someone that were very large to fill. And it's difficult. But we think we've selected the right person to work and to follow the success that Stephanie was able to do. We are also fortunate in looking at what we have and how can we expand on it in convincing, where's Elliot? Elliot McElroy. I first met Elliot a number of years ago in the Barry Treatment Court. She was a first-time clinician, had no familiarity with treatment courts, and that was, it was interesting to watch her evolution from a pure clinician to someone involved in the treatment court. Enough so that when I was in Burlington a few years later and they had an opening, I said, call up Elliot and see if she'll come up to Chittenden, where she was one of the chief clinicians with the Howard Center for a number of years in both the mental health court in Burlington and the adult drug court. We have convinced her to come back to Barry to be the drug court coordinator. It's significant because that court has been around for, I want to say, almost 10 years. Yep, 10 years, she tells me. It is the first time that they've had a permanent full-time court coordinator. And having worked in a number of the treatment courts around the state, I can tell you the importance of that position to making a court successful. So it's just another example of looking at what we have and how can we make sure that those courts are working before we get into the idea of expanding to every county. We're fortunate also, and it was touched on by some of the folks here, that Kim Owens, who could not be here today, was successful in obtaining a grant funding for that court to expand its services to include essentially, I don't want to say a new population, it's the population that's always been there. We just didn't have the services for them. My understanding is it's to deal with co-occurring issues, which is a big step, but it's another example of taking what we have and building on it. And that's what we're doing with all of our courts. And there are studies, Allison, we can make those available to you on the courts that are in existence, evaluations of each of them. On the newer side of things, we are fortunate with all the hard work by Bobby Sand, the support of the legislature, as well as the judiciary, and being able to expand the DUI court that has proven so successful in Windsor. And the idea is to expand it to Windham in the south and either Orange or Washington County in the north. We haven't quite decided yet, but in that expansion in and of itself would be significant, but what we're doing is, again, with the support of the legislature and the Supreme Court, created a new position that you'll come to know as the judicial master, which is someone who we will be hiring to essentially preside over these DUI courts. And I think Judge Griffin probably put it the best when he was talking about his work and these issues in the juvenile docket. He referred to it as the juvenile court as treatment court, sort of. And that's probably a good description because we're dealing with the same issues. And so the judicial master, we hope, is one that can make an impact in these courts, bring the skills to these courts that we need in the DUI court, and those same skills would apply in the juvenile docket, not as a presiding judge, but someone to work with the families who are suffering from the same addictions, and bring the same issues to the juvenile court that we deal with in the treatment courts. So I think Judge Griffin's description was apt. We are hopeful that if this model, if this judicial master works the way we hope it will work and we want to make it work, is that it will give us more flexibility, allow us to open up other areas to treatment courts that aren't presently being served. It is, in one sense, an experiment. The legislature gave us 3 years to try to make this work. Bobby and I and the rest of the folks involved are going to make sure that it works. But it's a real promise of equal access to justice for these types of dockets, and may be able to reach counties that otherwise wouldn't experience treatment courts because of the resources involved. And this would allow someone, and what's unique about it is that the judicial master would go from county to county to serve the treatment needs of those courts. So it's new, it's different. Even for the DUI courts that have expanded across the country, this idea of a call it a mobile court, you may get your chance to drive that bus yet, Chief. You know, we hope it's a model. We think it's a model that will work, and we're going to look for everyone to work with us to make it work. And that's probably could be the biggest change, the realization that we can expand courts around the state. I can't emphasize enough, though, in what you're hearing from folks today and repeatedly, and it was on all the slides and screens. It's following the best practices. It's following those standards so that the way the courts are operated, whether it's in Burlington or Rutland or Barrie, are all run on the same standards. The courts that we have now, for those of you who may not be familiar with them, in Chittenden, we have an adult drug court, a mental health court. They've both been in existence for an excess of 10 years. Steve Von Sytus is the coordinator up there. Judge Crescetti is sitting in those courts now. We have the Rutland Drug Court operated and run, thankfully, by Judge McCaffrey, who has provided his services to us for a number of years. And that court has been in existence for more than 10 years. Kim Owens used to be the coordinator down there. We have a small family treatment court in Caledonia that's presently Judge Bent is sitting in that court. We have the DUI court in Windsor that we hope to expand. Franklin County, Jim Hughes is here, has an adolescent court that I've talked with Judge Morrissey about. That court has been in existence for some time. But it serves a very small population, and I don't know that anyone's been able to figure out why. So that's one question we have to ask, but in the process of asking that question, I've reached out in the last month or so to Jim Hughes, to the public defender up there, Rory Malone, to Ken Schatz with DCF, touch base with Judge Morrissey, with the idea. All the resources are in place up there. The court time is already devoted to this court. Everyone is buying into the concept of treatment courts. Most of you are probably aware that Franklin County is, apart from Judge Griffin's comments, has been hit the hardest by this opiate epidemic in terms of their sheer numbers. We've had to put additional judicial resources up there. The public defender has added at least 2 to 2.5. Juliet is here. Mark Keller, for those of you who may remember Mark Keller, he's up there now as a defender. So they've added 2.5 new defenders. I think Jim was telling me you got one new prosecutor as of September 1st. The demand up there is amazing. What we're going to try to do is to transform that adolescent court that is underutilized to a family treatment court. So we're going to begin those discussions over the course of the next few weeks, month, to, you know, it's easy to say, let's have a family treatment court. We've got to sit down and talk about what that really, really means. And so that is something that is on the horizon and something that everyone that I've talked with is supportive of it. Steve Von Sytus will be involved in that court as well. And so we have everybody on board, and we're going to sit down and see if we can make that work. We think that if the family treatment court, with those resources in place, can make a difference in the numbers that are in Franklin County, then that's certainly something that could be applied and implemented in other counties, whether it's by a judicial master in a different place or a judge. Quite frankly, there's always going to be room for judges and other individuals to populate these courts and preside over these courts. That's what we're looking at in terms of where we are and where we would like to go. And it's going to take the efforts of all of us in this room to make this work. But we're certainly encouraged by the numbers of folks that have come to this conference. It's now 2 years in a row. We think that's important. And it's important that we understand that it's not it's easy to say we want a court. It's difficult to put those into place and to do it right. I like to think of Thoreau, simplify. So with everything you're hearing about treatment courts and how they operate in the different phases, if you don't work with it day in and day out or week in and week out, seems to be confusing. So at one point someone asked me to explain it in simple terms, and I responded this way, that Vermont, of course, for the first 150 years or so, was an agricultural community, and one of the bedrocks of that community was the 4-H program. So now I look at the problem that confronts the court system, and I look at treatment courts and the role they can play in that process, and so I've applied the 4-H's to it. And over the course of the morning, you've heard what those H's stand for. And at the beginning, and we have phases that we go through at the beginning, it's help. It's reaching out for help. Now, sometimes these folks come to the court not by choice, but maybe Amanda has arrived at an agreement with the state's attorney that it's the best alternative. They're not necessarily there because they want our help, but they understand very quickly if they want to be in the program, they've got to reach out for help. And that, for most of these folks, is probably the most difficult thing for them to do. So the second H, once they get into the program and say, I need help, and you've heard the word again this morning from some other speakers, is the term honesty. Because we cannot get anywhere with these folks unless they're honest. And they have, up until the time they come into this court and for a considerable period of time after they're in the court, they don't know what honesty is. And so it's a barrier that we have to break down for them to be honest with us. So they get through that phase, and then they enter the third phase, which is really what I call the H is home. Because in one fashion or another, if they're successful, they will be reunited with family, friends, children. And so that's the big piece. If they're completely successful in this process, they get to the fourth H, and that's hope. And that's something that has been denied them because of that addiction. So that, in its simplest terms, is the way to think about treatment courts. Now, Governor Shumlin left you on a note, or one of his comments was, if you haven't been to a treatment court, go to one. The experience in observing what happens is one that will remain with you for a long time. Chittenden meets every Thursday afternoon in one court or another. Barry meets every other Monday morning. The DUI court is twice a month on Fridays. In Rutland, it's every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, Judge McCaffrey? Every Tuesday. Every Tuesday afternoon. So I would encourage all of you to visit a court. But having in mind there's 150 of you here, I would strongly suggest that you not all go to the same court at the same time. Thank you very much.
Looking out at many of the people in the room, you're reminded that, or at least I'm reminded, that innovation requires risk-taking. And obviously in Vermont, as in most of the states in our nation, in order for us to continue to deliver justice, to provide equal access to justice to all, and to maintain the rule of law, we're challenged to innovate, to find new ways to meet the needs of the citizens of the state as we learn of them, and also as research starts to inform our practices. And so historically, for centuries and centuries, the court system has been an adversarial process, and that's a process that assumes that truth and justice will arise if you have two parties on opposite sides kind of fighting an issue to the ultimate outcome. And in some cases, the adversarial process is still the appropriate way to hear cases in the courts, but the work of many of the pioneers in the room here today show that there are also other ways that justice might be delivered. And in order for us to try these other ways, there are pioneers that need to be out there taking a risk and trying something new. And I would say the Vermont judiciary in particular, if you look at our judges and the kind of education that the judges receive at Judicial College, the combination of those two means that the Vermont judges actually have a lot of opportunity to use the research, not just in Vermont, but statewide, to take that and apply that research to their courts. In the court administrator's office, we have an important role, but it's more of a supporting role. So if you go back to the analogy we had before lunch that courts are a theater, then many of the people in the court administrator's office are kind of behind the scenes, running around with the scenery and making sure that everything's set up for the next act. And in addition to the kind of work we do to support what's going on in the courtroom, our responsibility is also to make sure that we in the judiciary are accountable for the resources that the legislature appropriates to us. And we also want to make sure that we're being aware of our performance out in the courts. We also have performance objectives and statistics, and more we're trying to do our work doing what's called outcome-based planning, which is as we take on various pilots, because we are committed to innovation, we try and say ahead of time, why are we doing this? What are the goals and objectives we hope to achieve? What's the best means to get there? And then how do we know along the way and when the pilot project is done, how we did? And in regard to the question that was asked earlier about our evaluations, I can just let you know that, I have to do my glasses for this, sorry, that we currently already have in our records and can make available to anyone who's interested the evaluations for the Bennington Integrated Domestic Violence Docket, the Caledonia Family Treatment Docket, Chittenden Adult Drug and Mental Health Dockets, the Franklin County Juvenile Drug Docket. We have various studies that were done that we use to inform our work that are done from around New England. We've got the Rutland Adult Drug Docket with an evaluation. We also have research from around the country, And we stay very close to the research that's being done and the best practices that are evolving along the lines that you've heard of earlier, to make sure that we're not only familiar with what the current accepted best practices are, but also that we stay in touch as changes are made and innovations happen in other parts of the country. The Wyndham Integrated Domestic Violent Docket, we have an evaluation for that, and also the Windsor County DUI docket, though as you know, that's very new. One of the challenges we have and being able to provide to the legislature and others who are interested in our accountability is that, as you've heard, it takes a while for people to go through the programs. And so if you're looking at doing evaluations of pilot programs, our planning needs to anticipate not only the early planning aspects of a project, then we have implementation, and then during implementation, we have people going through the dockets, waiting to see, you know, how many drop out, how many make it, then what is their recidivism. And so when we do this planning, we really need to do planning out over multi-years in order to really produce the kind of reliable information that the legislature and others would be looking for. This summer, the Supreme Court took a deep dive and did a serious examination of a number of our initiatives. And the purpose for that was that we have a very lean staff, and we want to make sure that we employ staff in the way that is most likely to fulfill the state's objectives and the court's objectives. And one of the areas that the court looked very carefully at was the treatment dockets and problem-solving approaches to justice generally. Out of that evaluation, the court made a number of decisions. One was, as Judge Grierson's already referenced, we will be looking at our current ongoing treatment dockets and bringing those dockets into compliance with best practices where they may not be. That requires us really to be working with all of you. Many of you are on these teams. And so Kim Owens and the specific treatment court coordinators that are associated with various dockets will be working with the teams to take a look at that. The purpose for that, obviously, is we want success. And since the evidence is pretty compelling now that court dockets that are following best practices do achieve their outcomes, we'd like to bring the current courts into compliance. In addition, we want to provide support to those people who see an opportunity for a treatment court approach, and we want to provide them the underlying framework or skeleton for what's likely to achieve best practices. Now, I happen to be one of those few people who loves to read research, and so I love reading all the research about this and the evaluations. But recognizing that many of you on the ground don't really have the time to do that, what we've put together is a packet, a kind of application that if people had an interest in reviewing the possibility of doing a treatment court docket in a particular place to address a particular problem, this packet actually walks the team through the kinds of activities, the kinds of analysis that need to underlie a proposal for a treatment court, with the thought that those of you who are interested in seeing good outcomes would be able to see the kind of investment it takes of time and energy, the population statistics that are most likely to be of assistance. And I think one other thing I should mention, with the exception of judge time and some court staff time, our treatment court dockets are all grant funded or special funded. There are no general funds appropriations for treatment dockets at this time. And when we're looking at starting up a court, we always look at it as a pilot, and the pilot needs to have funding attached to it. So those teams and parties who are interested in considering treatment courts can also consult with Kim Owens and others to find out where those funds are likely to be or not. All grant funders expect at some point that the grant goes away and gets replaced by general funds. Obviously, that is a big conversation involving certainly all the parties represented in the room, the Supreme Court, the legislature, people out in the field, citizens of the state, and I think in particular with treatment courts, unlike our traditional court models where we treat all cases the same, that's what equal access to justice means in an adversarial system. In treatment courts, as you've heard, we actually treat cases differently, and it's based more on the individual characteristics of the individual. And so the resources that are devoted to treatment courts are not minimal. And therefore, when we do get to the point where the Supreme Court makes the decision that it's going to be requesting general funds for the treatment courts, what they would like is that we go forward to the legislature with a full evidence-based package that that they do work and they are worth the investment. I wanted to get off the stage because I think we started late, so I don't want to take up more time. But I do want to encourage anyone who would like to know more about that kind of backstage, moving the furniture around part of the treatment courts to understand how we prioritize, to understand how we're currently using our resources. We're happy to explain that to you at any time. And I would just like to acknowledge and thank all the pioneers in the room. We're committed to innovation, and without your willingness to take those risks, none of us would be here. So thank you.